PFT Media.
This is The Experience with Chris Feo. In each episode, Feo brings his unique and unashamed interview style to Central Florida. He conducts honest and open interviews with people that have the vocabulary and expertise that he lacks.
You haven't really arrived in Central Florida until you've been interviewed by Ted Bogert. And in this episode of The Experience with Chris Feo, he turns the tables.
Gun in a holster, that vision is slipping like a worn transmission. The days of transporting and not transmitting, cause the transcontinental flow got me transient. I ain't transcribed the transcript, I fell in a trance and let the translation transfix. I'm a transcendent the hood, I'm translucent. Every time they think that I'm good.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of The Experience with Chris Feo. Today with me I have Ted Bogert of The Ted Show. And where he takes place, the Ted Show, is at the Citrus Club over downtown Orlando. Hello, Ted. How is your day going?
Hey, Chris. How are you? This is a funny mic to speak into.
I know. You don't really have to hold it up to your face like that either. You can hold it a little bit off. I mean, yeah, that mic is usually confusing.
Thank you for educating me. I need it.
You don't need much education. I need a
lot of education, Chris.
Well, speaking of education, your show, you get educated by a lot of people. You've interviewed a ton of people every day. Would you call your show a daily web series or a podcast?
Oh, gosh. I would definitely not call it a podcast because it's all video. But I would say it's a daily web series. That's good. Facebook Live is what we go on. But daily web series sounds much more intriguing and exciting than Facebook Live, so I may steal that from you.
All right. You have full permission to steal that one. And how many episodes have you recorded thus far? Do you have a number?
So our numbers, we did 450 today numbered.
Amazing.
Thank you. And we've got over 500, but the numbered ones are where the guest is coming in and they're actually talking about a topic rather than just promoting an event or a charity event or something else going on. So we're well over 500, but today was 450.
Amazing.
Thank
wow.
you.
And who was your guest today?
So I actually had two guests. I had Maurice Flournoy, who's a big national speaker, New Mind Creator is his, so he was fascinating. And then I had Doreen Olive, who is currently 6 weeks into her ovarian cancer treatment. Wow. And last month was Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month, and she came on the show, no hair, no nothing. And did an amazing job sharing her journey.
Oh, wow. That is amazing. How many stories of that do you get on your show?
You know, every day it's a new story. I'm never sure who's going to cry. I don't know who's going to emote. I had Sheriff Russ Gibson, who's the sheriff of Osceola County, come on. And I asked one question at the end, and he just, God bless you, burst into tears.
So, really?
Yeah. So you never know who's going to emote. And we try to create an environment where you can emote, where it's a safe place.
Nice. And I bet you had my producer, Boris, on there.
I love Boris. I love Marla E. They're amazing human beings. They're the reason I know you. And they're the reason I know a lot of really cool people in town. But I love everything that Boris and Marla are doing in our beautiful city. And I'm excited for your podcast.
Well, thank you.
Very excited.
You know, they really put it together well. I mean, the guests they garnish for me is outstanding.
Yeah.
And now these people are coming to us, you know, now.
Isn't that great when people start getting that vibe, like, wow, who's this Chris Feo guy?
And
then all of a sudden you get people reaching out to you. It's a huge blessing.
It is. And do you have that experience? I'm betting you have that experience being Ted Bogert.
Yeah, so we don't. You're very sweet. We definitely do. I scour Facebook, social media, looking for cool people, but most of the people who come on the show now are referred to me or have seen the show, and they have somebody who they think should tell their story. So we don't do a lot of R&D, a lot of research and development. They just mostly come to us.
Oh, wow. That's a wonderful feeling. Every time when you have someone contact you, It's just like you get that superstar feeling, like almost like an endorphin buzz.
It's amazing, actually. It's a it's a blessing, right? Because you these people don't necessarily have an outlet or a platform to share their story. So it's so awesome to be able to give them that platform, much like you're giving with your podcast.
Thank you. And what was... Are there some, like, stories that you ever had on there that you felt uncomfortable with or, like, were like, wow, this is shocking?
I've had some interesting people who I felt uncomfortable with. I'll give you two. One is courtesy of Boris, but I won't name names. The first one, though, is I had somebody come on, and they were promoting an event that they were doing, and about 5 minutes in, they started talking about how all of the girls in their organization all had to sign a promise ring commitment, even the ones who were five or younger, to not have sex. So wow. That was not on the agenda. I looked for it, trust me, and then I had a cocktail, and then I redirected them and got off that show as quickly as possible.
Yeah, that is very uncomfortable.
It was a little freaky. But you know
like
what?
Misogyny.
You don't, yeah, it was a lot. It was very, it made me feel uncomfortable, which takes a lot. And I just did not appreciate the fact that they did not share that that was their true agenda prior to the show, which you will learn when people come on. Most people are amazing. Occasionally people do not share their, true agenda.
Right, and then you get sandbagged.
And then you get sandbagged. And then there was one that Boris kindly sent me. It was a lovely, I must say I had a very lovely, amazing, fun time with this guest. But it was definitely got to the point where it was a challenge because the guest was a little bit louder than the Citrus Club necessarily is comfortable with. all good, though. That
yell
one did
talking.
Not, yeah, there was a lot of yell talking. That didn't make me feel uncomfortable. I just didn't want them to be asked to leave.
Right.
But I had a great time with them. The first one definitely made me feel uncomfortable.
I could tell. I mean, if someone was telling me that on my show, I'd have to quickly redirect that and then probably end the show in 5 minutes. Like,
you have
oh,
to
man.
Redirect. That's the key.
Yeah. And over these 500 interviews, how much have you learned progressing through them? Take me through Ted's start to now.
So the beginning was definitely, I was green. I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. You can tell because we have every video up, start to finish, on my YouTube channel. You can tell that I absolutely have no idea what I'm doing, but I was willing to deep dive, and I think that's what a lot of people miss out on. I just took the risk and took the chance. I would say that in the beginning, I didn't have an agenda like I don't have one now, but I'm much better at figuring out the agenda as we go along. So I've learned how to listen a lot better and then pull questions out based on what the guest or guests share with me on the show.
Right. And how did you learn that? Was that just a natural thing or like you said, you had to deep dive and get your head in it already?
Trial and error. A lot of trial and error. I learned very early on that I never do prep questions ever. And so early on, I had to learn that it was super important for me to be present and listen to the guest. And from whatever the guest was saying, the interview would naturally and organically flow. I just had to learn that over time, though. That was nothing that I taught myself. That was nothing that I did. I certainly stumbled over it a million times. But it was definitely worth the journey on that part, for sure.
Oh, yeah, and I believe you on the stumbles. I feel like I stumble a lot of the times on my show, even though I try to smoothly catch myself. It's just...
It's going to happen, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
You have to allow, in my opinion, you have to allow yourself that. You have to allow yourself to grow. And honestly, the more mistakes you make that your audience can hear and see, the more endearing it makes you to them And so it's a positive. I look at it as a positive thing.
Wow, I never looked at it that way. Like, I usually thought if a person would make a mistake on their show, I'd immediately not want to listen to them. You know, I never really. How did you learn that aspect? Was it through, like?
Well, I mean, think about it. If you've ever watched like a show like American Idol, we're all engaged in the beginning because we're watching the people who are making all the mistakes. So if you take that in a positive light, you know, we're looking for the people to mess up, to sing the wrong note. If you look at it from a positive light and you just take it and go, you know what? That makes them more human. They're not the perfect interviewer. It's not all cadenced. It's not all written. And you can actually see that they're having a conversation that's authentic. People will flock to you. If you are too prepped, in my opinion, and you, that's which is why we don't do any prep questions. If you're too prepped, if you have done too much research, then it can be a big journey.
And that's what Boris was trying to keep with the show, like with Kyle Eagle and Boris. Kyle's more of the study. Boris is like, no, just keep it off the cuff. Try and keep it natural, like you're saying. And it feels a lot better not having prep questions or thinking about what I want to ask, just going into it.
Well, because when you have prep questions, you're focused on the next question. You're not listening to your guest. And people who are listening to you will understand that. They can hear the fake transition. The segue is uncomfortable. And so if you're saying, oh yeah, that's funny, and by the way, and you totally change your tone, everything about the interview changes when you go to question number two, then question number three, because in your mind, you're not listening to your guest. You're just worried about getting all the questions in that you think you should.
That's one thing I try to really pay attention to. I catch myself sometimes being like, yeah, that's great, great, and then immediately jump into the next question. And like, I'm still green. This is my first season on this, you know, journey. And it's really interesting just to see how people open up to you, you know, just interviewing them. Like, one guest I had on here just didn't expect the style I was giving it to him. They were like, wow, he looked like he was told already. I'm like, you have no idea how little prep I did on you.
But I think that's important. I think that you want to be, again, present with your guests. And that's good. You create, I mean, I must say, the listeners can't tell, but the place that we're in, it's very comfortable. It's inviting. It's safe. You and Boris do an awesome job of making sure that that's how it is when you walk in. You feel accommodated too. And so when your guest walks into that, they're naturally more amenable to expressing themselves and allowing you to hear their journey and not the journey that they think you want to hear, their real journey.
Right. And is that how you got to the Citrus Club? Was that always a venue you had, or did you have to work your way in there?
No. So I've been a member of the Citrus Club almost 24 years. Oh, wow. The Citrus Club is very gracious. They allow me to do the show there in the rooms that are not booked. And the great thing about the Citrus Club, kind of like here, I mean, I think the lighting here is going to be awesome for any kind of show. But the lighting is so critical, and because we don't have a large budget and we do everything from my phone, the Citrus Club was just such a perfect place. They allow me to be quiet. They make it safe. They have a bar. There's a lot of really positive, cool things that go on there. And so you create that environment, much like you all do here, where you're comfortable. Once you're comfortable, then your guest obviously begins to feel comfortable too. They let their guard down a little bit. And then the more that you engage them in an authentic and vulnerable way, the better. You have to share things. You have to say, like you said earlier, you know, the things that you felt, the things that you might feel like you could do better at. Those kinds of episodes or examples of vulnerability will connect you to, in my opinion, connect you to the audience much quicker than if you just had a sheet of paper and you read down it, and then Ted Bogert was done with his interview, and we were done, and we moved on to the next one. They don't learn anything about you, and they don't learn anything about me.
You become the interview's a talking head, and you're just a robot that
Correct.
Just appeared on the show.
Correct. And then I don't feel comfortable around you, so why would I ever share anything that I'm thinking with you?
Exactly, and that's a big, important thing. That's why I personally, when I started this, I just wanted to be like how it was when I was on the radio, just, it was off the cuff. It was like, you know, you didn't know the person, you were just going to go at it. You know, we had a couple segments like that on Live with Benny G in the morning, where it was just us, the surprise hour, which is just either we have a guest or we, like, watch a video and review it or something like that. It was really fun, so I wanted to kind of keep that essence going with the show, and that's how it always came to fruition.
And well, you have a what I like about your aura, for lack of a better word, is you have a calming presence about you, and I mean that in a way where people feel like you are being real with them, and there's no airs about you. So that's such a positive thing, and so that's why I believe people will respond to you. If you come in, they can't see you right now, right? But I can, and so I know that he is as real as it gets, and I feel like that your guests feel comfortable with that, and you make them feel comfortable. So that's a testament to you. Keep doing that. Keep engaging them in that way.
Thank you. And that's also with my attire that I wear. Like, I'm not too fancy dressed today, but like I think like how you dress is important as a host as well. Like, you have some of the most flairest outfits I've ever seen.
But I'm
I'm on
what do we call it? A web series now.
Yeah, web series.
But so people see me all the time. The benefit, or the, I guess, advantage for a podcast is that you aren't seen necessarily. Every single day I get on live and people say, I love your jacket. I love that color, Ted. They pay attention and they notice it. When I'm out at an event, because they have seen it, they expect it. So I've set up this whole branding. There's a big branding thing involved with everything that I do. But I am in front of the camera all the time. It's different for you. You are not in front of the camera all the time. You have vocals, and they don't know what we're dressed like. They don't know where we are. They can't see this beautiful gallery that we're in.
I know.
But there is some wonderful advantage to that, because it kind of takes away all of that pressure. A lot of people are super afraid to be in front of a camera, even if it's just the iPhone.
No, that is true. I mean, I had that fear at one point myself when I was with another podcast called Fiend Fix, and they wanted to do a camera series, and I couldn't bring my, even though I was a part of like six people, I had to like move my chair back because I didn't want to be on film. You know, it was just an intimidating thing, and I was wondering,
why was it intimidating?
I don't know. It's like something about how I look. I wasn't too aware of how, like, I exactly came off in my presence. You know, I wasn't, you know, situationally aware as I am now.
Sure.
You know, like, I would, like, pick up my face or something, and then I would see it on film, like, oh, crap. Like, you know, people thought I was a degenerate.
No, but you know what's funny about that is I don't ever go back and watch a show unless somebody makes me. And it's not because I don't want to see myself. I'm just a one and done. Like, I'm finished. I need to move along. I want to promote. I want that guest to get every possible benefit out of the show. But I have to be cognizant of the next guest and be present. When you're on camera, when people do this, I had the lady today, the ovarian cancer friend of mine, Doreen. She had to blow her nose because part of the chemo that she's going through makes her have sinus infections, and it's and she didn't want to do it on air. And I right then and there said, you should just blow your nose. You could pick it if you want. I think that kind of stuff is what is people, then you become more believable, you become more accessible. And because you're human and showing that human side, that it's a good thing. So you picking your face, I think that's awesome. I want somebody to pick their nose. I want somebody to swear, which we've had on the show. I want people to feel like they can be the people who they are rather than who they think they need to be on camera.
And is that a growing ideology that you have with the show? Was that how you started it out?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So I think that I didn't know what I was getting into. One thing that I knew I wanted to do is show the real side of people that people don't get to see of our politicos, our CEOs, our business leaders, our charity leaders, our artistic leaders. I wanted people to see them in a light that they wouldn't necessarily see them in, because most of the time you see them at fundraisers, at charity events, at outings, at networking, and a lot of times that is the persona that they have to put out there in order to accomplish what they need to accomplish. I wanted to show a side of them that was the complete opposite of that, meaning their true self, what they really are, what they're like at home, what they're like with their best friends, what they're like with their family. And so that was, I always knew I wanted to do that, but I have learned over 2 years and 500 episodes that I can do that just by making the environment like you do, safe and comfortable and a place where they feel like they can let their hair down.
That's awesome. That brings credence to the saying that people are like onions.
They are like onions, very much so. I think that people, and people want to be their true selves. They don't necessarily, they don't like that persona that they feel that they have to be. And so we found, like, even when I've had the mayors on, or I had the president of Florida Polytech on, I didn't want them to talk about the rhetoric that they talk about on mainstream media. I wanted to get to know who they were. I wanted to know who Jerry is and who Buddy is. I want to get a feel for who Patty is, because when you're out at an event, these politicos, these CEOs, these charity people, they have to be on because they're in the public eye all the time. I wanted them to have a platform where they could actually share what they're really feeling, as much as their handlers will let them. But what they're really feeling, because I think the general populace wants to see that. They want to feel it. They want to know that they're accessible and reachable.
And that is a good job that you do. Every time I watch an episode, it's almost like I see another side of a person. Because I caught the Buddy Dyer episode, and it was almost like a complete different person was on your show. It was very stark. And I learned that over, you know, doing interviews, that a lot of people aren't, like, their persona is completely different than who they really are.
Yeah, so, for example, you know, Buddy is a great example because he does have a passion and love for our city, obviously. But he is called on the carpet to do so many things 24/7. And what I wanted to create there for him was a way for him to talk what was important to him, not what the news stations wanted to hear. And so when you see him, stark's a good word, when you see Buddy, for example, on that latest episode, he's also running again, so he's a candidate and a mayor. And he's talking about the things that are important to him rather than the same old stats that everybody throws out. And I think that when you're in that mode and you're that serious about it and you know that your job at this point depends on it, you're going to get a little more serious than you normally would on the lighthearted Sunday afternoon XYZ station talk shows. So I try to create that for him. It's the same with Sheriff Mina came on. And the first time Sheriff Mina came on, he was a candidate. And he came on and he had a handler. And the second time he showed up and I said, where's your handlers? He's like, Ted, I know what you're going to do. I know exactly how this goes down. You're never going to stop me up. And that's the thing, too. They have to trust you. Your guests have to trust you. They have to feel like you're not there to bring them down. You're there to lift them up. And so if you go into it and you feel like, all right, here's the deal. You have to be positive, and you set that expectation up. Everybody who comes in on your show will be positive.
And you mentioned before that you haven't been properly interviewed. How many times have you been interviewed?
You know what's funny about that? So, and the reason that I say I haven't been properly interviewed, I have a lot to share, a lot. And my history is deep and dirty and disgusting and insane and all sorts of things.
Sounds fun.
It's a lot of fun mostly, but there's a lot of depth to it. So when I say properly, I mean I've never been on an interview where we have dove. We're going to go with dove.
Yeah.
Where we have gone deep enough where that topic is, or those topics are good for the interview. Not every interview needs to be that way, but when I say proper, I also, the last interview I had, they had, I don't know, 10 prepped questions. Oh, wow. And all they could do was look at the 10 prep questions.
That's ew.
And I was done after the fifth prep question and wrapped it up. Because I just had to be done. And I just redirected them and we were finished. And they cut it off and they're like, I wasn't finished. I go, yeah, you were. It was time.
So you actually walked off an interview.
I just redirected. They didn't think I walked off. They thought they got done what they needed to get done. I just was not going to sit there for another five prep questions.
Yeah, I probably would not want to either. I'd probably would interject a lot.
Yeah,
into that.
It's just, you know, you can tell when, and I don't want to embarrass anyone. These people weren't mean-spirited. They just were unprepared. They were trying to get a story, not my story. So, yeah, it was time for me to redirect after the fifth question of, you know, it was almost like if you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be kind of question.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so we were done. But that's okay because not every interview needs to be deep. But I think that every interview needs to be where I feel comfortable sharing what I'm sharing and the questions are at least as organic as possible like they have been today.
Yeah, like, you know, think out. If you're going to at least a prep question, make it original, like your thoughts. Like, what do you want to ask him? Don't just go on 10 most common questions to ask somebody. Like, what type of, here on this episode of whatever show, Ted wants to be a ficus.
Yes, exactly.
It's like, there's not much hype around that. There's not much draw to that. Nor, really, who's Ted Bogert as a man?
Correct. It's just, you know, and I get it because interviewing someone can be a challenge. Interviewing someone who interviews other people is like this insane, exponentially challenging challenge.
I'm interviewing someone who's interviewed a ton more people than I have. And so far, this feels really comfortable to me.
Well, like, you know why? I'm going to tell you why. There's a couple of reasons.
Okay.
You're comfortable. You're comfortable in your own skin, whether you believe it or not.
Thank you.
I feel comfortable, and so as long as I feel comfortable, we're going to be good. If I did not, this interview would be completely different, and I don't care how strong of an interviewer you are, I would have completely flipped it.
Right.
But I have respect for you, and I feel like you have been authentic, which I knew you would be, and so the questions are real. You're asking me as you go, which is the best way you could possibly do it, with me anyway.
Oh, thank you.
And so you have to know your guest. Not every guest is going to be a me. A lot of guests want to know the prep questions. You're going to have people, if you haven't already, listen, Chris, you need to tell me, what are the 10 questions you're going to ask?
Well, I've had that
plenty. I can't operate in that, but that doesn't mean that it's wrong for them. And so
usually I try to default on, like, we'll talk about this, this, and this. Just tell me if you don't feel comfortable.
Correct. And it's so important. I can't stress it enough. I don't care what your interview style is. If you create the environment that you all have created here and the guest is comfortable, they feel like they're attended to, which I do, and they feel like you're being authentic, then it doesn't matter the rest of it. The rest of it will flow.
Yeah, and I learned this over trial and error with other shows, to that the setting is the most important. Even being on other people's shows, they told me, like, we keep the same setting because it sets us up, gets us in our flow. And I was learning that early on, and I had to keep that going because I was a lot on a couple podcasts where it was uncomfortable for the guest and for us immediately because we were just like, oh, we're getting too hyped or too, you know, like tense. Like, what we're gonna add? We're overthinking it.
Overthinking.
Instead of just, you know, sitting in your shoulders and just talking.
You know, and it's funny because people will say, "Well, you make it easy." Well, here's how you make it easy: you're you. So as long as you're comfortable in your own skin and you're you, the rest of it really is easy. It doesn't matter. I've had people who, even the mayors, I've never had a guest tell me that I did not make them, or they did not leave feeling comfortable. And the reason I think that that and there may be guests. I'm not saying I'm perfect.
Maybe.
There may be guests for sure. The reason that that, I think, occurs is because I just refuse to do an interview where I don't feel good about me and the situation, and I don't feel good about how they're feeling. If they're not feeling good, if it's in a room that they don't like, if the lighting isn't good, which is rare, if they are feeling uncomfortable about themselves, then I do everything I can to make sure that they feel comfortable. And I think that you do the same, and I think it's super important.
Thank you. And that's really awesome. And I really appreciate that, actually. That means a lot coming from you. You know, has there been one interview or any interviews that maybe like you just couldn't crack into the person's shell?
So I tell this because he's my friend. I did an interview, but it was the very beginning. So I don't give him, I give myself, I was the reason that did not go well. But he is a very successful Bollywood producer and actor. He was one of the first five shows. He did amazing things in India, and his interview was flat. And I look back at that interview, and he looks back at it, and he's coming back sometime in 2020, so we're going to do a reboot.
Okay, good.
but we keep in touch because he's doing amazing things in India. That, he said, I just didn't know what to do. I'd never been interviewed like that. So in fairness to him, I was new and green at it, so we're going to try it again.
Okay.
But that didn't make me feel uncomfortable. I felt bad for him. Let me think of, I definitely have had interviews where I leave there and it went absolutely completely different than I expected, which can be fun, right? Because you want that.
Yeah. I mean, this whole journey has been fun for me.
Like, well, it is. And so what's that been like? Like, so why, you have experience, I'm curious. I'm sure we talked about it on my show with you, but did you get into this, or like you wanted to do this, or did you go kicking and screaming and go, this is a new venue for me, this is a new platform?
It was a smooth transition, actually.
Was it?
Yeah, from being a musician to going into radio, because I was originally supposed to be a part of an in-house band on WPRK, and it turned to me being one of the characters called on the Live of Benny G called the Uber Manchild. So I was starting, I got my feet wet there, and I actually really liked it. I was like, huh. You know, actually getting to talk and, like, joke and, you know, it was exciting. I never really was nervous, like, behind the mic. I just, it was, like, a new way to, like, get out and, like, advertise myself and, like, release.
Sure.
And then I left there. I went to podcasting immediately because I had one guest on who said he was a podcaster. This was when podcasting started to boom. And I kept hearing it, like, podcast, like, what is the big deal about this? And I asked him, and he's like, you get to do whatever you want. It's like you make your own radio station, but it's not. You get to do whatever you want. And I was, like, intrigued by that. That was a very rough statement by
him.
But my first podcast I went to was Fiend Fix, and that was something different. I never had experienced, like, overall freedom like that behind a mic, you know, where it could be on the airwaves. And it was overwhelming a little bit at first for me because I'm like, I don't know what to say. There's just so much going through my head.
Sure.
You know, and then I just finally locked it down. By the end of my run with Fiend Fix, I figured out what I wanted to do. And that's what caused me to leave them, because I was like, I have an idea, but I don't think this is the proper platform for it. So I went off. I was a part of another podcast called The Salty Cult, which I thought I could help pioneer because it was just me and another guy.
Love it.
Yeah.
That didn't work out. Wasn't the right fit.
Yeah. Me and the co-hosts were just on two different pages.
Sure. And that happens. Co-hosts are tough.
Very
co-hosts
tough.
It's a partnership then. And if you've ever been in a partnership, business-wise or any kind of partnership, you know that isn't always the best place to be. Business is very difficult. And that's what you're in. You were in a business. But what I love is that you're willing to continue to progress, which is good. So what's the ultimate goal with this? if I'm allowed to ask.
And then you are more than allowed to ask.
You can, because I love it, because I think podcasting, you described it earlier, I love it. It's kind of like having your own radio station and you have full reign, or as close to full reign as you can possibly have.
Yeah, full reign, yeah.
And I get that, because you have people to, you're accountable to. But I think it's so important for people to kind of get the fact that this is a labor of love for you, right?
It is. I love doing this. I mean,
I'm curious, and then you can go back to asking me questions. Yeah. But I'm fascinated by why this is a labor of love. Why do you love doing this?
I'm a people person, like, really big. Like, every time I meet a new person, it's like I'm a dog let out of his cage. Like, I have to, like, I'm like, oh, boy, let's get to know each other.
Right.
You know, and when I talk to these successful people like Robert Hill, you, Anwar superstar, Mateo Blanco, it's like they've done a lot. And it's like, I want to know, like, what you're doing. I want to incorporate that into myself. You know, it's very applicable knowledge I'm getting from this.
Right.
You know, it's immediate. I could hear what you're saying to me, and I could immediately emulate it into myself to better what I'm trying to do.
Right.
Which, that's why it became a big love for me, was just the knowledge that came from this, the things I never knew or even thought about knowing. I fell in love with it immediately.
Where do you... I promised I would not ask
any
more questions.
Don't worry, you're allowed.
Where did you get the kindness from? Because you have... this is the vulnerability part for me, but where did you get the kindness? Because you have such a kind... If you haven't met Chris in person and you can't hear it, you have a kind disposition, and you don't say, I don't say that about a lot of people. You are just very kind. Like, everything you say is kind. We need more kindness in the world. I talk about that on my show a lot.
I appreciate that.
But where does that come from? Is that learned because of something, in spite of something? Did you grow up that way? Because it's very unique. It's a wonderful characteristic to have.
I think I grew into it. Like, over the years, my life was really tough, and I was angry at first. I was really confused and mad, and the older I got, the more I saw a lot of myself and other people that were suffering, and it made me really empathetic growing up. And this started when I was 16, 17, when I really just started opening my eyes and looking at people and not just being so self-centered in my pain. Maybe, you know, my thought process was like, maybe what I'm doing is causing them pain, because I'm seeing this look that I usually see in the mirror on them. So immediately talking to people, just really getting to know them, trying to find out their struggles, made me more and more empathetic. And also my parents too. They always try to teach me that, you know, you're not the center of the universe. You know, there are other people that are struggling, so stop being upset at people for this and that.
Right.
And even Boris still teach me to be patient too. Even like sometimes like an interview won't go the way I want, or like scheduling's hard and I get like, ugh, I'm really impatient. And he's like, listen, people are struggling. You have to remember that. It's, you know, people have their struggles in the world. And it's an active process to be kind. It's not something that just comes to you, because people are kind. There's a lot of kind people. It's just the level of kindness that they have available to them at the moment. And I try to keep as much kindness in my body as I can, because, like, you could be going through something, and I don't know, and I could be a dick, and I'll ruin our friendship. And Boris,
I agree. I think a lot of people, we just don't always know what somebody else's journey is. And so to have that kindness to emulate, to show it, actually, it's the showing of it that I think is super important where you're concerned. I think that it is incredibly important for you. I know I'm slow as molasses today. I don't know what my problem is.
You're still on Hefner's beer.
I know. Well, you know, me and cider, we'll call it cider.
Cider.
It's a tough road for that. But, yeah, I think it's so important to be able to express that. So I'm saying that not to call you out, but to encourage you to continue to be that way. Because as a host, people will respond to you more, as because they're going to sense that kindness. The kindness hits first, and I think it's super important. I wish everyone it would hit first. That should be the first thing.
Oh yeah, and it's just, you never know when's the last time you're gonna see somebody.
I agree.
You know,
I totally agree.
You know, I've lost friends that maybe I felt like I could have done more, but, you know, or said more, you know, and I didn't do it. So a lot of regret comes behind from being kind. It's just, it's like not guilt driven, but it's like, you know, you do make a difference.
Well, it's real. I mean, I think that's a real feeling to have. And so if that's the impetus, if that's the driving force, that's a great thing to have. I, in my opinion, I would rather have people be kind for whatever reason than not be kind for whatever reason. So doing it even guilt, of course, we're all going to feel guilty, right? That motivates a lot of us to do things. That's not a bad thing.
No,
but you're turning it into a positive thing. So anyway, I'm going to be quiet now because I've asked a lot
of
questions.
No, you're perfectly fine. This is all about the, you know, the experience of Chris Fio. I mean, it's an experience.
It's an experience.
Yeah,
I do love the name.
Yeah, you're not the only one who's like, oh, I'm so sorry. It's like, no, it's fine. I mean, I've interviewed Peter Von Daborski at a bar, and one of the bartender, Matt Duke, got up and started, like, dancing on the bar a little bit, and we were distracted by it and talked about it for a little bit.
I love Peter.
I know. He's so fun.
Oh, my God. I just literally, he's one of those people. You know, I think that we are blessed in our town, especially to have so many cool, amazing people, which is why I'll never run out of guests for my show, which is why you'll never run out of guests for your show.
I know.
We really have amazing people.
We do. And it's such a small town in Orlando. Like, I thought I would have to branch out a little more to really garnish these many guests, but everybody has been so amazing in this town.
I think people want a platform. Again, I think people want a platform where they feel comfortable. And so if they have a conversation with you or they have a conversation with Boris or both, they're going to find that comfortability level that I think is necessary in order for them to trust you enough to say, yeah, I would love to do an episode of The Experience with Chris Fio.
Thank you. And speaking of comfortability levels, are you comfortable enough to talk about early TED?
Early TED? Are we going there?
Yep.
Early TED or early the TED show?
Before the TED show came. Who was TED before the TED show?
Wow. That is a long conversation, my friend.
Well, I didn't want to make this short episode.
The funny thing is that I'm always comfortable talking about that. I feel like there are so many layers to that, so many layers of the onion.
Let's attack the first onion layer.
I think that is a, listen, I want to answer you, but what I'm trying to figure out is how to answer you. It is a long, long story.
Can you make, if it's too long, can you make it chronological and abridged?
Sure.
We'll try. Maybe. Or we won't. We could just tell the whole story.
Do you want... No, I'm fascinated by this. Do you want the TED history? Is that what you want?
Yeah, the history of Ted Bogert, the rise of Ted.
So, you know what? I'll give you a version, and then you tell me if you like that version. So the version of Ted, I grew up in a crazy-ass household, one I would never wish on anyone ever. I have absolutely zero relationship with my parents. My father's passed, my mother is somewhere, and my brother is somewhere. And I'm okay with that because I had my own family and realized I did not want that for them. And so I knew I had to break the chains early on. Always was my own person, always out there doing things differently. Grew up here in Orlando, thankfully. Went to high school, college here, loved every second of it, married my college sweetheart, we're going chronological. I had three beautiful children, I have one grandchild on the way, just really exciting, cool stuff. But I was able to create that family in spite of the insanity that I grew up with. And we can talk about that
on a different
show.
Okay.
And it's not because I don't want to. It's because we're an hour in and I'm cognizant of time.
I know. Well, I know you're really conscious of time, so I'll just ask you the last question that brings us to the hour, the Fio question.
Oh, I get a Fio question. Yeah, I don't know about this.
The Fio question with the TED show, how hard you're working, and all these offers being thrown at you, it's like you want to be your own empire. I'm getting that, right?
I like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Me, personally, I would like to know, how can we take Ted Bogert seriously, and how can we play our part in helping Ted Bogert's empire?
Well, how can you help? So things like this are helpful because there's many ways. But being on your show, Chris, is helpful because I don't get interviewed that often, and I certainly don't get interviewed where it's a real interview and not stupid pat questions. No padded questions. I feel like the introduction to more people is so positive. Boris is amazing at that. He and Marla E. have introduced me to you, to Kyle, to Chris Crespo. I mean, I could name 100 people that they've introduced me to who have all been on my show. That is so important to the life of the show because I can't possibly know every single human being in town, although it feels like I do. I can't possibly know everyone or their story. And maybe there is someone in the midst of what we're doing that their story needs to be told. And I rely on people like you and like Boris and like Marla to introduce me to them because they obviously have a story, and the typical platforms that they would utilize are not going to pick up that story. They're going to have no interest in that story. I have a big interest in that story, and I want to promote them. I want them to grow. I want their businesses to grow. I want their art to grow. I want anything that they want to do to grow, much like your show. I want to see grow because the more you grow, the better the world is. And I know that sounds so cliche, but I really think that we all have the power to make our worlds better locally and globally. And we do that by collaborating like we're doing today, collaborating with people like Boris, like you, who I can't even tell you why I know Boris. That's the funny part. Boris will probably tell me later. But I don't know, but it doesn't matter. That was an introduction. And look how much that's impacted me and my world. So we have the power to impact so many people's worlds in such a positive way by the things you and I are doing, the things Boris is doing. And I think we need to continue to do that.
That's wonderful. I love hearing that. And I really sympathize and really take that in a lot. And I got to say thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you. It was a joy. I loved every second of it.
I know. This is the
I got to pontificate and speak for like an hour all by myself, and nobody challenged me. That was good.
I know. This is probably the longest episode of The Experience, and I'm not
really
mad at it.
I'll apologize.
Oh, no. This is wonderful. I mean, the longer the better, the more interest that you have in the
show.
We'll
have to come back for part two, and then we can, what do we call it? I dive. I can't understand that word.
Whatever,
damn word is.
We'll call this episode dove and divved.
Yeah, we divved.
We divved into the experience with Ted Bogert today.
Keep up the great work. Keep doing it. You're amazing.
Thank you, Ted. And for all of you, thank you for listening to this episode of The Experience with Chris Fio. I look forward to talking to you again soon. But right now I know there's no place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. There's no place that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. Just you and me. There's no place that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. Just you and me. There's no place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. There's no place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. There's no place that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me, just you and me. There's no place that I'd rather be than right here.
The Experience with Chris Fio is produced by Boris Douglas Garvey and Kyle Eagle. It is a joint production of Borma, Vonti, and PFT Media. The theme song is You and Me by Enmore Superstar.
A PFT Media production.